So they've hired a cook. They're now feeding the workers so that they can have a good meal, so they can have good shifts and all this other stuff. And he's working really hard to maintain his struggling business. And so we see him working these later hours, and his like stripped clothes have been reduced as well. He's got kind of just the vest and the shirt, and it's my favorite thing, sleeves rolled up to the elbow so you can see the forearm. And I'm just like, ooh, yeah, baby, save that mill. It's like so nice. Lillian, hello. Happy Friday for our listeners. It's Monday, but I'm feeling the Friday vibes. The sun is trying to come through my curtain, although I had to drop it for the sake of sound buffering. But it's a lovely day, and I'm so excited to talk about this movie. How are you?
I'm so good. I also feel bad that our listeners keep getting our Friday vibes on Monday mornings, because that's really tough for them, and it's so jarring.
No, don't feel bad. This is nice. We are carrying this positive Friday energy into a Monday. So it's like, hey, are you a Garfield? Well, now forget about it. You are Skimbleshanks the Railroad Cat. I don't know.
For the next 50 plus minutes, you are a Friday with us.
Exactly. So this was our palette cleanser episode, part two. Every five Jane Eyres, we give ourselves a little bit of a break and we watch another period drama or romance. So we, upon partial viewer listener recommendation, and also partially because I am obsessed with this and I feel like you have similar vibes, we decided to watch the BBC miniseries North and South, which is also 2006?
Or 2004.
2004. Okay, great. If you can recall from end of last episode, or if you hung on that long, we have a great personal story of Lillian and I talking about this while we were both in college, far away from one another, in which I called her up and I was like, okay, I've just seen this thing. I'm crying. I want to write and read 5,000 fan fictions about it. I need someone to talk to with this. So she then watched it as well. So this is both of our second watch through.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Although I watching this was like, I remember none of this.
Oh, really?
I want to talk about that more once we get into it. And I don't want to spoil my hot takes before. I know a lot of our listeners experience the content that we watch through our, I'm going to call it critically acclaimed summaries. So I would love for you, and I am going to time you, and it's okay. A lot of plot because it's a four episode miniseries and a lot of things happen. So I'm going to, yes. I am going to time you, and we try to keep these fast.
Yes.
I wish you the best of luck.
Oh my
Whenever
God.
Whenever you're ready, I'll start the timer.
Okay. I think I'm ready. Here we go. So the plot of North and South is we have this character named Margaret. And first she was in this kind of beautiful, like gardeny, luscious place in the South with her family. But they have to move up to this industrial town in the North because her father, a really cool guy, refused to reaffirm that he believes that the Bible is law because he's a pastor. And so he's like, whoops, I guess we gave up our beautiful house and now I'm going to go teach people here in the North. So they go there. And that's where she knows she's trying to interact with the people. And she meets this guy. His name is John what's his last name? Oh God, Thornton. It's John Thornton. And she sees him in a cloud of beautiful cotton snow and he's very pretty, but instantly he beats a man up and she's like, holy crap, you were handsome, but then you were violent. And everything from then on, she's like, I don't like him. He's rough and mean, even though he's actually has a lot of care for his workers, as does his very intense, harsh family, but that's the way they have to be to survive in this place. So it's kind of this journey of him instantly falling for her, but making a bad impression. And so he just keeps, you know, trying to kind of win her over, but he's hard and standoffish. And she's very snobby, in my opinion. And they also have in their family drama that there is a brother who has to hide away in Spain because he mutinied on a pirate ship. Nope, it was not. It was the English Navy. Captain of the ship was mean. And so he's like, you can't beat up all these kids. So they mutinied the captain and now he's a criminal of the country. So he snuck back into England to go see his mom before she died. And then, John Thornton sees Margaret embracing her mysterious man on the train tracks. And he's like, it's a lover at night. And she's like, no. But she never tells the truth because she wants to keep it a secret. So then all these other things happen. She, her dad dies too. She inherits a fortune from a handsome man who I would totally run away with if he asked me. And then She like is like, oh wait, I realized that actually John Thornton is great. I'm going to go and give him all this money so he can save the ranch, the family ranch. And they meet at the train tracks and they kiss and they're like, let's just be together forever. The end.
Oh my God. That was just over 2 minutes.
Amazing.
And for those of you at home who maybe listened to this or really watched this a really long time ago, and you're like, wow, some of those facts feel wrong. Like, I don't remember her brother being a pirate, and I don't remember there being a ranch.
Well, I've been slowly making my way through Our Flag Means Death on HBO, so I think I've got pirates on the brain, but there you go. Oh my God.
Well, to be fair, I have been obsessing with Bridgerton, so I too will be bringing irrelevant pieces of information to this episode.
Amazing.
Oh my God, that's so good.
Okay, so there, that's the plot. Lillian, what did you think on your second watch through of North and South?
I think, per usual, my favorite adaptation of North and South is Piper's summary of it. I don't want to bum you out. I really had a rough time with this.
Really?
If I wasn't watching it for this, I maybe would have enjoyed it more. Because I like take notes and I pay attention and I look up facts about things and all that stuff. And I think the biggest difference between, and this is probably my problem with it, the biggest difference between this and a lot of the other things that we consume is, dang, did they inject reality of the times into this BB? And wow, it's a sad time. A lot of this is a really sad time.
Did it just super bum you out?
It bummed me out so hard.
Oh, no.
And because I didn't have like a 4-hour chunk this week, mm-hmm. like usually I'll just like sit down and have a movie night. Like, I watched these episodes one at a time. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, guys, the first 3 episodes are rough. The last episode is great.
Oh my God, I disagree. It didn't bum me out, but
yeah. Well, and I think I really think that this is the difference between what you and I like about a period drama is like, the smoldering looks do not get me through. Like,
really? That's just all I need.
I know. It's the really great moments of like looking at each other when like, and there's so many good ones. But it just doesn't get me in this, because instead I'm like, yeah, it's cool that you guys are getting through this. Are you aware of how many people are just dropping dead in this sad, sad town? Actually have so many opinions about the labor conflict in this one.
I was going to say something I did not cover in my synopsis is that the like overarching kind of like subplot conflict of this is that they're dealing with unions and strikes and like, because the workers are like, we're not paid enough or we want better conditions. And so they form a union and they go on strike and everyone is starving to death. And then the starving makes people go crazy that they form a mob mentality and they storm the mill. And then the union breaks down and they get their jobs back. But people are slowly stopping to die. But still, they're like, well, I guess unions don't really work. It's just like, actually, they do. But
well, and just like a little. Yeah, actually, they do.
They do.
Important thing to say, because yes. Like, that's what I think I was able to just sort of like let go of and just kind of move on. Like, it's like, if you, as a person with the morals that I have, I don't mm-hmm. just let that go in life.
Right.
But in a 2004 British BBC miniseries that's about the romance, you can just let it go. Like, it's fine. Unless you're doing a podcast about it and you have to take notes about everything that's happening. And then my little brain keeps asking historical context questions. Amazing. So I spent the first 3 episodes being like, now, but hold on, what year did this get published? And then when were unions like actually happening and like all this stuff? So I have some facts on it and I'm going to use those to bum everybody out here for just a quick second.
Oh my gosh.
And then we could talk about the other fun stuff. I don't want to end with like me bumming everybody out.
Let's start with bumming everyone out.
Yeah. I'm going to start with bumming everybody out. And then I also wrote like a little teaser trailer for it.
Oh.
And kind of like, how would you entice people to watch this? So I'll immediately come in and lighten the mood after my facts with that, unless you have some lighten mood things.
Oh, well, I definitely do, because all I want to talk about is the romance of this. So yeah, you give us bumming facts, I'll bring us up with kisses.
Great. You are deeply uninterested in unions and so just like a handful of history facts, skip the next minute of this podcast. So the first thing that I want to talk about is the legal status of trade unions. First of all, dang. You want to talk about an internet rabbit hole you can go down, try looking up just some basic facts about unions in the United Kingdom in the 1800s. The author of the original book was Elizabeth Gaskell, Gaskell?
I don't know. I haven't looked it up.
Don't correct me. It's my podcast.
It's her name now.
Yes. It's actually like legally it's changed. She doesn't have a microphone. They didn't exist.
No, she's dead.
But she published it in 1854. So this was just about 7 years after Jane Eyre was published. Mm-hmm. She is from London, because I was really curious about that, given the North and South, for those of you who don't know, is a reference to the fact that Margaret comes from the south of London, just about like a few hours south of London, mm-hmm. and then moves to a completely different area, which is north of London by a few hours. I did look it up, and it would be an 9 hour carriage ride at the time. Oh. And it would have been a 4 hour train ride.
Interesting. So that's
and
like
they're about the same distance. So I feel like this is a thing that the United States always has over people in the UK, is we're like, that's real close.
No, I was like, that's like somebody having snobbish opinions about someone who lives in Duluth versus Minneapolis from where we are.
Genuinely, it's in so many ways, it's actually worse. It's more like I live in Red Wing, which is just about an hour southeast of where Piper lives in mm-hmm. Minneapolis. It's like having a snobbish opinion about people from Red Wing versus people from like the Midge. Like, it's unbelievable.
It's so silly.
So crazy. But like there was less travel at the time. And this was a time when, like, with the industrialization, traveling was becoming a lot easier, given the fact that they did a lot of trains.
See, I assumed they were like up close to the Scottish border or something, because he's got that kind of like almost Scottish brogue sort of going on. So
too. And I was like, maybe this is like a fictional place. And like, I looked it up and it's like, no, it is 64 miles from London.
Oh my God.
I literally wrote 64 miles from London, LOL. So just for every, like I said, this was published in 1854. The Royal Commission of Trade Unions was put into effect legally in 1867. Mm-hmm. So this was not only, there was another law in 71. I do not understand the nuances of that. If you came here for deep historical facts about unions, you are listening to the wrong podcast. I did my best.
Also, if you came here for that, weird.
What a
You're just so lucky that Lillian decided to pick up on your vibes. And she's like, someone out there wants to know about the unions. I'm going to go in depth. Yeah.
We are deeply unqualified to talk about what we do talk about. Let's be unqualified to talk about something else too.
Oh my gosh.
That means that, like, to me, that makes this book and the publication of it and the conversation around it like even more revolutionary, mm-hmm. because in 2004, obviously people's opinions about unions are somewhat different, and the history of unions are super cool, and unions in general, I'm a big fan. I think this podcast is going to go ahead and take a big pro-union stand, and then we're going to put that totally aside for the rest of the podcast as we just talk about how great kissing is. One other thing that I want to mention, this was really, really hard for me to watch. They kept referencing how much cheaper it was to go wholesale to the US for cotton goods.
Oh no. Because
the reason
the
that
slave
was
trade?
Cheaper was because they didn't have to pay for labor at all there.
Yeah.
Because of the greatest crime, slavery.
Yeah.
Greatest crime's a tough one, because we've done some pretty horrendous things as humanity. Mm. But definitely up there in the top. Definitely not going to take a little tangent down criticizing slavery way, because oh my God. I will just live there.
No, no. Go back to the sad other stuff. We got to get back to kisses.
This is the last fact, and then we're going to power through to kisses. I just wanted to point out that this was published 6 years before the Civil War. So every time that they allude to America in this show, they are alluding to being pro-slavery. Anyone who's pro going to America for cotton is pro-slavery. And it's gross. And yes, I hate it.
That is bad. But yeah, so now that we have that subcontext there, maybe here's a little ray of sunshine that kind of ties it all together. The leader of the union is played by the guy who plays Mr. Bates in our beloved Downton Abbey. So I saw him and I have a little note because there's like a scene where I guess she's walking around the factory area and she goes on the staircase and she happens to be walking up the staircase like right when 1,000 working men get on their lunch break. And like she's like pushed against the wall and they're all kind of like harassing her and like making fun of her. And she's like, no, please, please go away. And it's like, lady, I don't know. I always feel torn about that scene. I'm like, I feel like honestly, if you just didn't look like you were having such a bad time, they might leave you alone. And you could just be like, dude, fuck off. But obviously that's not her personality. So Mr. Bates comes in and he tells them all to go away. But yeah, so he leads the union. So that kind of ties everything in there.
Yeah. Lillian, the actor's name is Brendan Coyle. Why do you make me read these?
I don't know. You're the one who volunteers the names. I didn't tell you Lillian. I know I'm holding up a sign that says, Lillian, tell us the actor's name.
You're just going into it. You have a gun pointed at me and you say, just like in elementary school, your grades are dependent on whether or not you can read this name. It's, I would say, I would guess Coyle. It's C-O-Y-L-E.
Yeah,
so Coyle. Pronounce that however you want. I'm going to make the decision that it's Brendan. It's for sure Brendan, not Brandon.
Yeah.
That one I know.
Totes. Let's dive into John Thornton's character. I want to talk about him first, I think, because I think he makes, like I said in my beautiful summary, I think he makes a very intense first impression because first, he's gorgeous. Like that's the first thing that I think of when she sees him there, because the mill that he runs, this cotton mill, it has these big industrial machines that are, you know, turning the cotton into fabric. And it causes all this fluff to fly around. And that's part of like this union issue is, you know, people breathe the fluff into their lungs and they die from that. He, it's said in the show, is actually one of the better masters. And this is a term they use. I mean, not to make a parallel between the whole slavery thing we just talked about.
We put all of that away. There's no social conflict in this podcast.
Oh, yes. So he is one of the masters, though, who has taken efforts to protect his workers' health. So he's like installed this expensive fan that helps take, it reduces some of the fluff. And he's like, and so when people are like, oh, that's very generous of you. Why would you spend so much on these people? And his reason, I think he's so interesting. He's like this interesting scale of balance where he's like, well, you know, if they are healthier, then they can work longer. And that means good product for me. So he's kind of very much a businessman by the numbers, but also there is this like kind of compassion there, but it's like kind of viewed through this sort of strict business lens. And that's something that I think is really interesting about it's, you also see it in his mother, who I think is also an incredibly interesting character in this. She is a very harsh woman, very outwardly standoffish and like no nonsense. She has a stone cold face. She's very like matronly in like a scary way. But she also has this incredibly, I think, deep and compassionate heart. There's a scene later in the movie when she's decided early on that she does not like Margaret because she thinks Margaret is a snob. And how dare she not love her beautiful, amazing son, which agreed. Yes. I would also hate any girl who's like, no, I don't like you. And I'd be like, how dare you hurt my boy, my sweet baby boy. So she's very anti-Margaret, but she has a connection with the family. And when Margaret's mother is dying and Margaret is gone, well, this happened because her mom's like, go to the fair, see the fair for me and tell me all about it. And she's like, okay, I'll leave. And then she dies while she's gone, haha, almost. But she calls Mrs. Thornton, John's mom, over, and she asks her, she's like, when I die, can you please kind of be a surrogate mother for my daughter? And she's like, I don't like your daughter. She's mean to my son, but yeah, I guess I'll do that for you. And she does. She like, you know, kind of tries to give her advice and look out for her. So they have this cool harshness, but also a great deal of compassion and care, which I like about them.
Yeah, I think in so many ways, when we're talking about, obviously, the show is called North and South. It's about the differences between how kind of this industrialized world that is very new and progressive and like all of the, like the future where people are just sort of like blunt and honest about things. And it's about like your business savvy and stuff versus where she comes from the South, which is sort of this idealized, literally the way that they do the colors in this is that like soft, warm lighting, like very dreamlike in the way that they approach that versus this like kind of harsh, dark reality of, is it called Helston? Is that? Nope.
Milton.
Helston is the South.
Yes.
Milton is the North.
Yes.
And I think that obviously the two love interests are representative of that, but I think that there's, I see more of that play out in the difference between, yes, Margaret, but really the two moms, like the mom, Thornton's mom, whose name I should have written down.
Just Mrs. Thornton, I guess. I don't think we know her first name.
She is an intense lady, and she's the kind of, I will say, big plus for this show is I love every character is so good.
Yes.
The mom is so good. She has some really creepy moments with her son that I didn't enjoy.
I didn't think they were creepy. I think they just have a very close mother-son bond, but it never like crossed that like, this is a bit too intimate vibe.
Write down, please stop touching his face too many times.
Oh my God. He like took them out of poverty. She loves her boy.
I know. She definitely has that like, no woman will ever love you as much as I do vibe. Which is too much for me.
It's a lot.
But that's my only complaint about her. I love how three-dimensional she is. I think that we've talked about this before. We actually just talked about this in the last episode about having lots of different kinds of women and how important that is in being able to talk about strength and what strength is. I do think that Margaret's mom, I would describe as not a strong woman.
Oh, no, no. She's very frail.
I found her so whiny and annoying. And I understand what she's saying. She's a very sympathetic character, but my God, you are in this now, a subplot that doesn't exist, but did in my head and was never directly contradicted. And it did make the show better for me, was the maid slash housekeeper and the mom, clearly like very best of friends, really, really loved each other. I made that romantic love in my head and it plays and it works.
Dude,
and
no,
I think they're in love.
I saw that too. I don't know about the mom loving the maid back, but when there's that scene where the maid is telling about like how she like first met her and was so nervous and like how the mom gave her a handkerchief and she kept it and then she came to check on her and she's like, I'll be with your mom until the day that she dies. I was also like, I'm like, I think that lady is in love with this woman. I didn't personally think it was reciprocated, but I think she definitely had romantic feelings for the lady that she worked for.
I don't think it was intentional. I'd be really curious if other people, particularly reading the book, felt that that was intentional. But in my head, that makes the book a lot more interesting, is that these two have this torrid love affair. And that's part of the reason why the maid doesn't like the husband at all. And it's not just because she thinks it was a bad idea to move. It's because she's totally in love with the wife. And the wife is always asking, she never, ever asks for husband. She always asks for the housekeeper. I think they're in love. And I think it's very sexual.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So Margaret's father, I really liked him too, especially since I thought he had all these really cool modern ideas and philosophies. So I mentioned in my recap, he was like a parson, I believe, because he had the house that they lived in that beautiful place down south was like it was part of his parsonage. So like the church was like, oh, you get to live in this beautiful house if you teach at this church and everything, or preach at this church. And I love that he stuck by his morals, which I also agree with, of being like, no, I don't think the Bible is law and everything like that.
And it wasn't just the Bible. Like, it was a super specific doctrine that they were saying. And they sort of alluded to it being maybe an amoral, outdated doctrine that the new leader of the church came and was like, this is what we're going to say. This is, everybody needs to reaffirm that they believe in this. And he was like, I didn't believe in it the more I thought about it, but I didn't feel like saying that.
Yeah. I also love, there's a scene later on where he goes to, and I'm just going to call him Mr. Bates because I can't think of what the character in this's name was. He goes to Mr. Bates's house, or maybe Mr. Bates comes to his house, but it's after his daughter has died, Mr. Bates's daughter. And I think he's like, well, you were like a religious man. And I think he's looking for some reassurance, being like, tell me like she's, you know, in a better place and everything. And I kind of love that the dad is like, well, I don't know anything for certain. Nobody knows anything for certain. And he gives this kind of very spiritual reassurance, which I enjoyed. He's like, you know, but everything's got to be better than this. And they kind of had this little debate of him being like, I don't believe that I believe in a God, but I don't think he would put us through all this suffering for nothing. And the guy's like, I can't believe in a God that would do this suffering to people. It is kind of that seesaw discussion. But yeah, I liked,
it was,
the positivity. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a really interesting perspective. It was a really interesting conversation. And I think the dad had a lot more of like this idea that like God gave us earth and he gave us things and then we decide what we do with it. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Bates' response was sort of like, I really don't see God giving some people a lot and other people a little. Like, that's not the God that I believe in, which is really, really interesting. And particularly, I think at the time would be a really controversial thing to even right. like have that kind of discussion.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting as well. And I think that that was one of the big differences when they talk about North and South, like people in the North, like actually had those conversations where people mm-hmm. in the South, we see that particularly when she goes back to Helston at the very end of the story.
Yes.
She's talking to the new pastor there and he literally says, I want people to have more fresh air instead of reading silly books.
Yeah.
And like, she's like, hold on. So you want everybody to be ignorant? And
yes. Goes, that's literally what she says. And
simple truths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I loved her just like saying it. I love that scene shows us that she's brought back this kind of northern straightforwardness with her. So I love that she's changed and kind of adopted these things, because I stand by what I said in my summary. I think Margaret is a snob through about a lot of this. But that's the thing, is that I prefer a story with our two love interests where they both have growing to do. Like, she needs to kind of get off her high horse and you know, see people at their level, and he needs to not be so violent and beating up men every time he runs into the girl that he likes. Yeah, no, there's both growth for them, and they both go through that growth to come to be on even planes with one another at the end, which is actually kind of beautifully symbolic, because just to jump to that real quick, since this works with my tangent, they, at one point when they've like kind of realized how they feel about one another, they switch places. They both get on trains. He goes down to her hometown to go see this beautiful place that she's described. And I view that as him like trying to know her better. He's like, I want to understand her. I want to know this place that she loves so much, because maybe then I can like see into her heart a bit. And she goes up to Milton to go, you know, talk to him and offer him all this money. And then they meet when their trains are stopped at the same train station, and they meet on that platform. And that's like just like the journey that they've gone on. They're now on this, on the same playing field, and they can open up their hearts to one another. And it's beautiful storytelling. So I like that.
I will say, just that scene, like I literally wrote down, I was like, because the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, I remember liking this a lot more than I'm liking this now as I'm watching it. And then I watched that last like 10 minutes of the last episode. I'm like, this is what I remembered.
Yeah.
So good. The train, they pull into the train station. They're both on opposite trains. They're both like aware of the fact that they've fallen in love with each other. They're both in such, they've literally switched places, right? Like he's had this loss of, he's not going to be able to run his factory anymore. She had just walked into it being shut down. She has become an heiress because of Mr. Bell, who I want to talk about. That she is coming from the North. He is coming mm-hmm. from the South, and they meet halfway on this train platform. And oh my God, he loves her. And he's finally realized that she might love him too. And that there was never another man. It was always her brother. And like, just so good and cute. And the way that like the way that he like has her go sit down, she's like, I'm going to go get Henry, who I also want to talk about, and have him explain like what this business thing is. And he goes, you don't need him to do it. You can do it. You can explain this. And like his belief that she can be a businesswoman and that like she can explain the business thing, and that like he just like fully believes in her. And then the way that he just like that besotted look that he has on his face, and how it keeps going while she's like, the idea of like me proposing an actual like business deal, like a like going through like, this is the thing for my business, and a man just being like, damn, you're so sexy with your numbers and you're talking about banks and your investments. Like, that's like my dream. And this dude is just like, I love you. And then she's like, so like, really, I'm not doing you a favor. Like, it's not charity. It's a business investment. And like, he's like leaning in and it's like, you can have whatever you want. Do you want my shoes? You can have my shoes. And then he kisses her and I'm like, I love you.
Oh my God. I think the kiss is like the most gentle, softest, beautiful kiss that I can think of seeing in a movie or TV. There are other kisses that I love, but that one, it was just like perfect. It was so good.
It was so good. And the fact that like, he then like kind of gets up and she goes and gets on the other train and he kind of just is like in this like dazed stupor, like, I just kiss her and I love her. And this is, and maybe she's got to get on that other train, but this is fine. That was actually all I needed, maybe. And then she's like, comes up behind him and he sees her reflection in the window and he turns around and he's like, oh my God, you're going to get on the train with me?
But the line, Lillian, he says, because he's like, he turns around, he's in this like dream state. He sees the woman of his dreams has come back to him. And the line he says, he's like, are you coming home with me? Like that. And I'm like, oh my God, it's their home now. I love it so much.
And it's frankly scandalous that they get in a train car, just the two of them, unmarried.
I know. And I wrote down, I'm like, makeout session all the way home. Yes.
He puts his arm around her and let's talk about billowy shirt vest Thornton.
Oh my God. Ooh,
he's the one for me.
He's taken off the cravat. There's no necktie. It's just like open. You can see the collarbone.
He's so buttoned up the whole show. He's got a velvet top hat that is a lot of a choice for a character. Mm-hmm. And man, does this man so angry pull it off. And then off comes the hat, off comes the jacket, just a like vest that's sort of open. And then, and the flowy shirt and the way that he's just kind of, like, he goes from this like buttoned up, stressed out dude who's got all these responsibilities to being this guy who's like, I don't know, life's great. You're so pretty. I'm so happy that you love me. We can do whatever you want forever.
I also really loved that progression of his wardrobe was kind of gradual throughout that final episode, because whenever we see him, he's partnered with he's working very closely with, why can't I think of it? Downton Abbey guy, Mr. Bates.
Mr. Bates.
So they've hired a cook. They're now feeding the workers so that they can have a good meal, so they can have good shifts and all this other stuff. And he's working really hard to maintain his struggling business. And so we see him working these later hours and his like stripped clothes have been reduced as well. He's got kind of just the vest and the shirt, and it's my favorite thing, sleeves rolled up to the elbow so you can see the forearm. And I'm just like, ooh, yeah, baby, save that mill. It's like so nice.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. Yeah, baby, save that mill. Okay. I have to now talk about another classic Piper quote. Yeah, baby, save that mill. Obviously, that's going up on the board. But we've talked about violence a little bit too much for me not to talk about the most famous.
Okay, first, you say this, but then I'm going to explain it so people don't hate me.
No, I'm going to explain the whole thing. I don't want anybody to hate you because it's my favorite thing that you've ever said. And there's a reason. God. This is the problem with having friends for as long as we've been friends. is Piper and I have been friends for 16 years now.
Yes.
And so she was like 12 when she said this, which we were watching another early 2000s classic, X-Men.
X-Men 2.
That's right. I forgot it was the second one, but you would know. And her truest love at the time and potentially still, we'll never know, was Hugh Jackman. And he fully hit a woman in the face because they were fighting. And Piper's response to that was, not afraid to hit a woman. Oh, yeah. So she's a big fan of a violent man.
Oh my God. Context. So this is X-Men 2. He's fighting like the female version of himself, Lady Wolverine. My mind, it was from a bizarre feminist take. I was like, no. He's seeing her as an equal and he will fight her. He's not doing the whole like, I'm not going to fight a woman. No. He's like, boom, punch in the face. And I'm like, sweet. Values that lady's skill in combat. That's where that came from.
He sees me as an equal, and because of that, he'd hit me in the face.
Oh my God.
So that has only been an inside joke for 16 years. Not afraid to hit a woman. Oh yeah. Which I did think as soon as he was beating that man in the mill, I was like, this is Piper's not afraid to beat a man. Oh yeah.
So what I wrote down, so it's important, a little context here. The reason why she sees him beating a man up is because he catches that guy smoking and he like yells at him and he chases him down. And he's like, I've warned you about this before. And then he talks later when, you know, they formally meet. And she's like, yeah, I met this guy before. He was beating a man within an inch of his life. And he's like, you don't understand how dangerous it is, that the thing that he was doing. He is responsible for the people in his mill. And if that idiot was smoking and like caused a fire, everyone could die. And so he then describes, he's like, you did not have the misfortune of seeing what, like, six bodies laid out on a hillside after this mill exploded. That's what I saw. And yeah. So he knows firsthand how this can kill everybody. So I wrote down, I'm like, yeah, he's like looking out for his people, but like, like, maybe took it a bit far.
Like, yeah. It was a little far. And it was, and where we take a strong stance against violence on this show. We do not believe that violence solves any problems unless it's Hugh Jackman hitting someone as an equal.
As an equal. Or a man beating up a guy who threatens to burn all of his workers in a mill. I personally think protective violence is very hot. So, you know, it all depends.
I like protective fictional violence.
There we go.
Yeah. That is my hot take. I've thought about it a lot. I just will say I like fictional protective violence.
There we go.
Anyway, I do think I have a lot of sympathy for him in that particular moment. I don't think that your boss should get to beat you up because you were smoking.
He takes that action into his own hands.
So on a different, the other love interest that we're comparing him to throughout this, and there's actually kind of two, and I want to talk about both. I want to start with Henry.
Okay. Who's Mr. Sideburns. So boring. I hate him.
Oh my God. What a boring, stupid man. He's so dumb.
His prissy little face. Like the whole time he looks like he smelled something bad. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? Relax.
Well, and he's the example of like who she quote unquote should be with. Like he's the one that like everybody thinks that they're going to be together because she's like so nice that she's like friends with him. And I think it's her cousin's husband's brother.
Yeah.
And like the start of the show, they're at a wedding and they dance together and she's really friendly with him. But we learn that she's kind of nice to everybody because it turns out Margaret's a nice person. He ends up proposing to her and she turns him down very sweetly and he gets really mad. And the thing that I don't like about him that makes me dislike most male characters when they're in things and also just characters in general is he feels very entitled to her.
Yes.
Thornton is also upset when she turns down his proposal, which she did go, I haven't learned how to say no to things like this. And he's like, oh, cause you're getting proposed to all the time. But he's mad in the, I thought that what you just did was a point of you loving me was you proving that you also had the same feelings for me. So he's kind of embarrassed and like thinks that she thinks that she's better than him, but he does not think he's entitled to her.
Right.
Henry thinks he's entitled to her and Henry can go to hell.
Thornton literally has a line and it like breaks my heart. The scene where he goes to propose to her is so hard for me to watch because I'm such a John Thornton fan and I'm so mad at Margaret for turning him away. But when he's, you know, he's done the proposal and she's yelling at him. It's very much a Lizzie and Darcy scene. But he says to her at one point in the height of this kind of argument that they're having, he says, I do not wish to possess you. I want to marry you because I love you. And like, when I hear him say that, I'm like, truth. There's so much truth and emotion in his words. Why can't you hear that? Why can't it open your heart? And it's because she still hasn't gotten over this violent, cruel, industrial man thing that she thinks that he is. And
well, and he comes in with like, he does the thing that I think a lot of these period drama men do, which is like, he has her on such a pedestal, but his reaction to that pedestal when they're in the same space is to be mad at her. Like he's like, his emotions are so heightened that he seems like mad at her. He's like, I love you. And that pisses me off at you. How dare you make me feel all of these feelings? I'm a man. I'm not supposed to feel things. Gross.
Well, he's very confused. And even says he opens with a very vulnerable line where he's like, I'm not used to expressing my feelings or things like this. He's like, I can't, it's hard for me to find the words. That's what he says.
Yeah.
And so there's like, so much vulnerability on his part and why it tears my heart in two when she yells at him and turns him away.
And she kind of cuts him off and he's like, I thought we would they end up having a pretty serious conversation that he doesn't do a great job of expressing his kind of stance on.
Yeah.
And then he goes into it. And then he says, this was the line that broke my heart. He goes, I thought we'd talk about the fruit and then I would tell you how I felt. Like he like was already, he like had this all planned out and it like didn't go the way he wanted at all. And the conversation with his mom before he goes and proposes, oh, he says, my favorite line that he says there's so many good ones. He says, I daren't think that a woman like that could care for me. Oh,
I know. It's like, that's the hard part too, because, okay, so a little context for this scene, if you haven't seen the show or if you don't remember, but what spurred this on is Margaret happens to be at the mill right when this riot occurs.
Because she doesn't have a great deal of common sense.
No, no. So she, he has called like the militia to come and like get these men away. And she's like, no, you shouldn't solve this with soldiers. You should be a man, go down there and address them and talk to them and tell them to leave. Like, they'll hear reason if you do that. And so she inspires him first to go and do this brave action. He goes down there. She then realizes, whoops, this is actually a really dangerous situation I just volunteered him to do. I better go down and help. And so she runs down there and she defends him in front of them. She's like, how dare you go back to your homes? And this one guy, this redhead who's caused a lot of problems, he picks up a rock, chucks it, it hits her in the head. She gets like knocked out, and then everyone feels ashamed, and Thornton's like, get out of here, how dare you?
And at the time, she's physically using her body to shield him in a very spoicy period drama moment.
I know, it's so good. Like, he stands, like, he grabs her and he's like, you have to get inside, and they're all in each other's arms, and then the rock hits her head and she's unconscious, and he's like, the look in his eyes, like, I will burn the world down, how
is
dare you?
This what you wanted?
So there's that whole scene. Then his mother is the one who says, well, that was her declaring her feelings for you. Obviously she loves you. And he's like, mom, don't give me this false hope. Please don't give me this false hope. I don't think she likes me, even though I am in love with her and I would walk through fire for her. And she's like, no, she loves you. You better go and like propose. And so the mom convinces him to do this thing. And then he like comes back with his tail between his legs and his head down. He's like, no one will ever love me but you, mom. It's so sad.
Yes. And that's what their fight is about, is she's defending them. And he's being like, absolutely not. She's sort of like, there's two sides to this issue and we need to like talk it through, and like, and that's her whole role in this like conflict that there is between the workers and the, and specifically Thornton, because we don't give a shit about the other masters. Ugh. But they're terrible people, but Thornton's such a good guy. He just is so reasonable, and if somebody would just talk to him, he'd be able to figure it all out. That's the fight that they get into, is they start with that, and she's like being all sympathetic, and he very much has the, they threw a rock at you and you were unconscious. pretty importantly, in this same space, another character that I really want to talk about is his terrible sister.
Oh my God, the sister.
Who is so dramatic the whole time. So like, this rock throwing incident happens. The sister is freaking out. Like, she's totally fine in this house. Like, this mob is not coming in to beat his sister. Like, she's fine. But she's like acting so dramatically. She just is a really dramatic person in general. She would be the star of a reality TV show today. Like, that's the kind of person that she is. So Margaret gets hit in the head. She's unconscious. They bring her inside. Thornton goes to deal with some stuff that he has to deal with after this mob was there. The mom goes and gets the doctor for my favorite possible reason, which is no one else would do it because they were too afraid to leave. They have male servants. They have all these other people. Literally the only person who is brave enough to go out into this mob to get a doctor for Margaret is Mrs. Thornton. What a badass. Anyway.
But also, no one would mess with that woman. You see her walking down the street, you turn around, you go the other way.
Like, I'm so sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean to breathe the same air as you. You were obviously breathing that air. That's my bad, actually.
Sorry.
But then, so then Margaret is like, I have to get home. Like, my parents are going to be worried about me. They will freak out. If they, like, my mom is too fragile for this, I have to get home. Mm-hmm. And so she gets escorted home by the doctor. Mr. Thornton comes back. John Thornton comes back. And the sister's on the fainting couch.
Yes. It's like, where the hell is my beautiful girl? Why are you there instead?
He's like, he goes, what happened to her? And the mother's just like, I don't know. She's just being a wily bitch. Don't worry about it.
But I think the sister, she's like, I almost died. Like, she's like freaking out.
She's like, I was so scared. And the maid is literally fanning her. And I'm like, you know who should have been scared? The people work here. Like, nobody was going to come after you. You're fine the whole time. And she continues, she is that annoying from the second. What a great actress to make you hate that stupid character for just being so vapid and nonsensical.
Well, the thing that I love about her is, so like, when the sister and Mrs. Thornton first go to visit Margaret's family. They're commenting about how small the house is and it's not big enough to host parties. And the sister's like, wow, you don't even have a piano. And she's like, well, it wouldn't really fit in the house. And she's like, I couldn't live if I didn't get to play piano every single day. I love music. And then there's a scene later where we're in the Thornton household and you can hear her in a different room singing really badly. Like she's over there like, la, la, la. It's just like, oh no, she thinks she's good at music, but she's not.
Oh, and it's the same thing. Like she just is so deeply unaware. Like she is the worst example of someone with privilege. Like, because when her brother is like trying to save the mill and like pinch pennies, wherever it is, she gets engaged to this terrible man who's doing speculation, which I tried to figure out what on earth that was. It's basically like risky investments,
yeah,
in sort of like sketchy stuff. It's like just on the edge of gambling. But so she's engaged to this guy who's equally terrible. Like, what a great match is a good description. But she's buying all of this stuff to like go off on her wedding, and Margaret's in there, and like she in her head thinks that Margaret is judging her. And I think that it's actually that Margaret is genuinely morally superior to this person, and that makes her feel yucky on the inside. And so she blames Margaret for it. But she like goes to like make the purchase or whatever, and like insists on charging it to her. She's like, just charge it to Marble Meals. Like, it's all fine. You don't have to pay anything. And I'm like, well, he's rich and your brother's trying to keep a business going.
Yeah. Anyway. That just for her pride. And it was like, wow. Okay. Yeah,
she's
not cool.
Terrible. She, even when she hears Margaret's leaving after her mom dies, her dad dies. Mm-hmm. She is clearly like a ghost with grief. Like that actress did such a good job of like playing off the like being a polite society person, but also being like just like devastated.
Yeah.
And the sister can't stop talking about the new wallpaper in her fancy house, and the mom just goes, "She's not coming back to see your new furniture. Please stop talking. Go stand in the corner."
Yes. Oh, but that scene leads up to, I think, the best line in the entire show, which is, so everyone's in their morning clothes. She's here to say goodbye to them. John Thornton appears in the room and he's like, "So you're really leaving us?" And she's like, "Yeah." She leaves and gets in her carriage and he's there at the window. There's a lot of scenes where people watch people from windows in this show, but he's standing there at the window. It's the snowflakes are falling, which is a beautiful parallel to their first meeting, because so often when we see white things in the sky, it's all this cotton, but here it's actual snow. Winter has come. Margaret gets into the carriage, and as the carriage pulls away, he says aloud to himself, he says, "Look back at me. Please look back at me." And it's like, oh God, as if that one glance would be all that he needs. And he's like, I just need some affirmation that there's a chance. And if she had, he'd be like, I'm going to run after that carriage. I'm going to stop that plane. I'm going to get up there and devote myself to you. But nope, she keeps looking forward. And he's like, I guess I'm a piece of shit. The woman I love will never love me back. Might as well, whatever. Yeah. But it's like, Which, soft boy.
He was still wearing a top hat and a jacket. So how could she love him?
He hadn't yet rolled up the sleeves. That's
yes, the billowy sleeves is what we need. The other character that I really want to talk about is Mr. Bell. That's the other love interest who he could so easily be a creepy character. And I think they do such a good job of playing him as, so he's a friend of her father's. Mm-hmm. He's fairly clearly interested in her, but he's not creepy about it.
Yeah.
Like he just finds her charming and interesting and likes her as her own person. Mm-hmm. And I really, really liked him. And I think given the fact that you said you would have run away with him, I think you might like him also.
I do like him also. I think that Mr. Bell, he appears because he's like the landlord that the mills that Thornton runs are on. So that took me a while to figure out. I'm like, why is he here? But he owns the land. I think he appears in the story narratively to be sort of like this almost kind of southern mirror to what Thornton is, because Thornton is very harsh and in all of his blacks. And then here is Mr. Bell, who's this kind of, he's this gentleman, he's this very dapper, charming man, he's very easygoing. And I think there's quite a few scenes where right after we see Thornton interact with Margaret being like a harsh man, then suddenly Mr. Bell will show up and it's like, look at this contrast of these two people. I do really like Mr. Bell. I think he's very charming. I think he's rather handsome. Yes, there's an age gap between them, but you know, that doesn't bother me. And I think what you said about him potentially being creepy and then playing that well so that he's not, I think there's a scene at the end that I think would be really easy to mess up, where he's with her, they're in the place of her hometown, and he has become her guardian, which makes it a little odd. She is his godchild, and he is like, yeah, I'm going to take care of you. You're gonna get all of my money and all of my land, and it's all going to you. And she's like, why? And he's like, well, there was a while when I, you know, fancied that maybe I could care for you, and maybe you could care for me. And she gets this look on his face. He's like, don't worry about it, though. Like, I realize now. He says this right after she's kind of been alluding to her love to John, even though she doesn't really quite realize it yet herself. But he's like, oh, clearly you're in love with him. I'll throw away any notion that you might marry me. It's cool. I won't even propose. But I am going to go off to, what country is it? He goes to Argentina?
Somewhere in the Southern Hemisphere, like somewhere yes. in South America.
Yeah. He's like, I found out that I'm dying and I'd like to do it on a beach. So I'm going to go down there and you can have all my money. And it's just, it's played very well. And I think, oh man, that's really nice.
Yeah. And that's sort of his attitude the whole time is like, where if we talk about the three love interests that Margaret has in this, there's Henry who sucks. Mm-hmm. And he very much is like, he's on paper the perfect match for her. He's like mm-hmm. from the South. He is friends with her family. Like they could have this lovely life. Like her cousin who she writes to the whole show and she very clearly really loves, it's her brother-in-law, and her cousin has this whole idea of they're going to get a house all together and they're all going to live together and be happy. And like, he is the personification of the kind of life she could have had if she'd lived in the South. Mm-hmm. He sucks.
Yeah.
And then there's Mr. Bell, who's a friend of her father's. And again, like I said, like he could be seen as really creepy, but he respects her as a person. Yeah. And like, it's so clear. It's that slight difference between when men in fiction and in life talk to you as a person or as a object to kind of like win and have. Mm-hmm. Like, are you as a person here to be interesting because that's what I want? Are you essentially like not your own being, but is your existence to serve me? Mm-hmm. And I think both Mr. Bell and Thornton don't see her that way. They see her as a whole person and they care about her as a person and they value what she wants and what mm-hmm. she's looking for and her mind and her values and like talk to her like she's a person. Yeah. And that's where I think Mr. Bell is like such a great example of that. But because he values her as a person, because he sees her as a person, he goes, I didn't want to make it weird. Like he doesn't even bring up, there's so many moments where I'm watching it going, Margaret, I don't know if you know this, but that man would also like to marry you.
Yeah.
but she always totally oblivious to that, but he doesn't push it. And he doesn't yeah. even, he can tell she wouldn't say yes. And he cares about her and he wants to make sure that she's okay. Mm-hmm. And he sees himself as someone to care for her and sees himself in that guardian role and protector role. I think protector mm-hmm. is probably a better term because guardian feels gross, but he sees himself in that protector role and he's happy to play that role, whether or not she wants to be his wife. And that is so great. And that's what makes it so great. And then she becomes an heiress.
Yeah.
A bad thing to happen either.
I was going to say, it's that I wrote it down. It's a kind of a Jane Eyre parallel there too, where it's like once there's this kind of shift in power before they can accept the man that they love, which I like that as a form of respect to be like, no, we are equals. And that is very important before I can give you my heart. And I think that's great.
And I absolutely love. That's the reason why episode 4 is like, I just absolutely loved. You can just use our summary for the first 3 episodes. It's a rough time. And then just watch episode 4. The whole of episode 4 is her kind of getting her feet under herself as her own person at this point. Like her role has been a lot of caretaker for her parents. First for her mom, who like couldn't handle moving to the North and then got really ill and she needed to take care of her while she was dying. And then for her father, who didn't know how to be a person with her mom gone. Yeah. And then ends up dying. I'm going to ascribe his heart of heartbreak because of losing her mother. And this is and that's obviously a huge amount of grief that she has for that, but it's also somewhat freeing once she has that money that she can be what she wants to be. And there's a scene that I absolutely love where she's talking to her aunt and her cousin. She's been staying with them. She has this money now. And she goes, I want to be my own person and I want to have my own life. And I want to not visit people that I don't want to visit because I don't like them. and I don't like them. And it's so amazing to see her that like self-assured and empowered. And I absolutely love seeing women get that.
Yes.
And then go, and now that I feel like I'm my own person and I'm like whole myself, now I'm going to go find billowy sleeve hottie. And we're going to kiss on a train platform.
In front of this guy that I don't like, which I thought about how I was going to do the intro. And I was like, maybe I can do this. I'm like, this story begins with a lady turning down a man's proposal and it ends with her cucking him on a train station. I'm like, oh my God, suck it, sideburns.
And she like goes back to be like, hey, I'm actually not going to go back with you. And he like closes the door like, I can tell. Goodbye.
Yeah, I saw you sucking face with that hottie. I guess I'm going home alone.
I figured earlier when you guys looked at each other like you were deeply in love, and then he like sat down on a bench with you and kissed you, like he would love to just do that, like these soft kisses for the rest of time. Oh, I figured it out that you're gonna marry him.
Oh my gosh, so good.
I do have a couple of fun facts. And then I also have what I wrote in notes as a trailer, little teaser trailer for if you wanted to watch this.
For North and South.
For North and South. I think it'll really convince people.
I want to throw one thing out there before we add these little bits. This is the last kind of like me putting on my little analytical hat in watching this. But I appreciated that. I felt that the turn that Margaret takes from I'm better than you snob to realizing that he's a good person and that she cares for him comes when she starts to see others looking down on him as she used to. So we see this when she goes to the, like the World's Fair or whatever it is. And all the Southerners are being like, oh, like this stuff is so weird. And that guy is so grumpy and all this other stuff. And she's like, well, actually the industry is really important. And also he's harsh, but he works hard to protect other people. And so I liked that when, you know, it kind of holds up a mirror, I think, to how she sort of was treating him previously. And I like that that's where she kind of starts to realize like, oh, maybe I have been too harsh on this guy.
And it also lends some context to why he's so defensive about everything with her. It's like, I think part of why she gets frustrated with his harshness is he comes in really hot. Every time she seems like she's criticizing him, yes, there's a double entendre there. It's fine. It's
like he comes in like, dun, 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 dun. Just like, oh my God, stop. We are in public, sir.
So he comes in very angry. every time that it could be interpreted that she's criticizing him. And then you see these other people's opinions and obviously those people influenced her opinions. So it's like her preconceived notions about what it was that what kind of person he was and who these like tradesmen are.
Yeah.
And you can see her kind of like realizing not only what is it that he is and like valuing him and defending him, but also why did he react to her the way that he did?
Right.
And why did he already come in super angry? And it's because he's had that reaction to him every time that he's ever done anything.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that's, I loved that growth and realization. So share us facts, give us your trailer.
It's casty cast first, but I'm going to start with. So Richard Armitage.
Oh, so handsome.
He is probably most famously from The Hobbit.
That's Thorin Oakenshield.
yeah. But I know him from the TV show Robin Hood, which was from 2006 to 2009.
Oh yeah.
He was Guy of Gisborne in that show. And that was, I was watching this guy. I'm like, I know that he's in The Hobbit and I know that I knew him from something else. What did I know him from? And damn, you want to talk about like a hot and angry man.
Oof. Oh yes. They got him in that long shoulder length, curly black wig. It's very smexy. I also think it's so funny that him playing a dwarf in The Hobbit, they always do this in Lord of the Rings movies. So like, what if we took someone who's 7 feet tall and we actually pretend that they're 3 feet tall? And I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you casting these giants?
You already mentioned Mr. Bates, whose character name we're just not going to even use.
No.
but his daughter, who we didn't talk about, speaking of tragic deaths and sad, sad times, her name
chokes on cotton.
Character's name is Bessie. The actress's name is Anne Maxwell Martin, and she's in a ton of things. She's one of those like British actors who's just kind of in all British things.
Yeah.
I specifically know her from she was in Philomena. I don't know if you ever watched that movie. She was Jane in Philomena. And then she was in Becoming Jane. She played Cressida Austin, so one of Jane Austen's sisters in the movie, okay, Becoming Jane. And then she was also in Doctor Who, which, nice, is not a Piper show, but that's a thing that I've seen. The father was played by Tim Pigton Smith.
Okay.
And he is in a ton of things as well. I actually just like didn't even write down any of them in particular. He's just sort of in stuff. The actress who played Margaret is Daniela Denby Ash. Okay. And she is someone that I knew from Torchwood, which is a Doctor Who spinoff show. So you've probably
heard of that.
Haven't seen that.
No.
But she is most famous for this role. She's not, nice, in a ton of other things, which is surprising to me. And then a random side character that was bothering me every time he came on screen was the police inspector.
Game of Thrones.
He's in Game of Thrones. He's, yeah, one of the guys on the wall, and he's, mm-hmm, his name is Edison Tolent.
Okay.
Which, you know, I have a lot of his name. That's his character's name. His actual name is Ben Crumpton. And again, super confident with the name pronunciation. Don't expect me to make me sad.
One other that I recognized. So the redhead who ruined the strike, I don't know his actor's name, but he's in the Sherlock Holmes movie with Robert Downey Jr. And he plays he's a cop. And I think his name is Clarkey or something like that. But yeah, so I recognize.
Again, him with 100% confidence, don't question us or Google it.
It's fine. Those are their names now. Yes.
Yeah.
Lillian, so I've never seen North and South, and I'm wondering if you have a trailer that you can share with me so I can get an idea.
The vibe that I want you to, you're putting yourself in this mindscape. You're on TV, maybe you're on YouTube, and it's those moments of trailers where it's just sort of like a series of questions. Mm-hmm. And so these, and a little bit of context, I spent most of this week watching Bridgerton or consuming Bridgerton-related content. So the trailer opens and it asks the questions of, did you like Bridgerton but wish that it was literally darker and a lot sadder? Do you watch period romantic dramas and find yourself asking, but what about the reality of poverty during these times? Did you find yourself watching people cough to death in Jane Eyre and go, that happened awfully fast. I wish it was a lot more drawn out. Do you watch children dying because they're so poor and think that it's not a big enough plot point in Jane Eyre? Do you wish that Jane Eyre was sadder? Do you wish that people were a little bit more desperate? Do you always wonder, not only are there a lot of sad orphans, but how did they become sad orphans?
Oh my God.
If these sorts of questions appeal to you and you want those answers, I would recommend watching the first three episodes of North and South.
Can I do a little spin-off trailer?
Oh, sure. You mean, okay, mine didn't convince people to watch, you don't think?
Oh no, I think that would get a whole bunch of people in to the theaters and sitting in front of their television sets. But because as a good marketing firm, it's good to know, you know, target different audiences. So that's one trailer. But I think I would also add on to it. It's like, do you also like immensely tall men who look like they could be vampires and or sexy pirate captains, but instead they're running mills? Do you like guys who use their fists, but also sometimes open up their hearts? Well, then this is the show for you, North and South on BBC.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's the two shows that this was. Yeah. Like, it did feel a little bit like it was two different shows. Given our very clear hot takes, what, before we talk about what we're going to watch next week, was your rating, Piper?
Ooh, I'm going to give this 9.5. Train stations.
Ooh,
yes,
that's a really good rating scale.
Thank you.
So I did. I'm not going to put this as on our official rating, but I did feel the need to separately rate episode 4. So okay. I was just going to rate episode 4. That's a 9 out of 10 for me.
Oh yeah,
great. It was really, really, really well done. I could not get over how sad I was the rest of the show. It was too, it was good because it was too real. Like, yeah, it felt too real to me. I go to the period dramas that I watched a little bit for escapism,
yep,
and I couldn't escape this. My overall rating is 7 out of 10 black dresses.
Very nice. Very nice. Lots of morning clothes. We kind of talked about this a little bit, but one of my last notes that I made was that train stations are such romantic locations. I think there's quite a few scenes in period dramas that take place at a train station platform. And I'm like, oh my God, something romantic or terribly sad is going to happen here. And yeah. I just love it. So yeah, I went with train stations. You can just use a train clip art for my graphic.
Okay, fine. I guess you don't really believe in my ability to graphically represent a full train station in like a single inch by inch square that's going to get squished down even smaller.
I mean, Lillian, why don't you just go and take a screenshot of the movie Hugo, the entire film, take a screenshot of it and put that on because that takes place in a train station.
Perfect. I love it. So I feel that my palette has been thoroughly cleansed.
Yes, mine too. Refreshing.
And so next week, we're going to go with another adaptation of Jane Eyre, which I know is shocking to our listeners who come here for our hot takes on unions. but we're going to be watching the 1996 adaptation of Jane Eyre, which has Charlotte
Do you want to send it in the chat? I can read the names this time.
Grainsburg. We're going to go with Grainsburg. And once again, please don't correct me. If you don't know how to spell Grainsburg, just based on my gut check of the name. there's no R in it, so I don't know where I got the R.
Lily. I want as this podcast evolves to be like, so this movie stars Robert Funny Face Squishy Pants, because I can't think of his name.
I'm not thinking of it. I'm literally looking at it. This is genuinely the worst.
It's so funny.
Oh, wait. No, that's that. Oh, my God. Sorry. I just thought that must be a child, Jane.
Can you read? Should I tell all of your clients that actually you've been faking it this whole time?
No, it's so important. I have them all tricked into thinking I'm a deeply competent person and not that I can't read names. but one of the reasons that we're choosing to watch this adaptation right now is that William Hurt, who recently passed away, played Mr. Rochester in this. It has gotten rave reviews and sort of thinking about the fact that he recently passed on, and I know him from a bunch of other things as well. Yeah. We felt this was a particularly relevant adaptation to watch. So yeah. We're going to be watching that for next week.
Yeah, I'm excited. I wouldn't mind. I think it'd be fun to watch this with my mom because she's a big fan of this actor. I've come across screenshots of this one when I was first diving into my obsession of Jane Eyre, and this Jane looks far too stunning. I mean, obviously it's common that they cast beautiful women, but this woman looks like a princess. And I'm like, why? What? Whoa. So I'm very curious to see this one.
I think my biggest criticism of her so far, having not seen the movie, is I wish she had an easier to pronounce name.
Yeah. How dare she?
I think I feel like everybody should be named things like William Hurt.
There we go.
Which is super easy to know and read.
Yeah.
Where she obviously chose her last name to make me feel dumb on a podcast.
That's it. I was glancing at this online and I think I saw Anna Paquin's name in the cast, AKA yes. Anna Quaquin, star of Fly Away Home, the Goose movie. So that'll be fun to see.
I think she was Child Jane. That's what I was stumbling upon is... it also says Jane Eyre under a cast. So nice. Usually it calls out that she's Child Jane. So that's why I was stumbling. So I was like, hold on. Is Anna Paquin Jane in this? I don't remember seeing that.
That would be wild.
I'm pretty sure she was Child Jane.
Cool. But little Anna Paquin.
We'll have our real facts next week.
Exactly. So look for this version. Watch it along with us. I'm pretty sure I've seen it for free on Amazon streaming. But not 100% certain. But either way, we will all come back together and share our thoughts on next week's episode. And in the meantime, Lillian, how can people connect with us if they want to share their thoughts?
They can find us all over the internet using the tag Airbuds. So at Airbuds on Instagram and Twitter, you can search for Airbuds on Facebook, as well as you can email us airbuds@gmail.com. Please, please, please send us your recommendations for adaptions. Piper and I, contrary to popular belief, do have access to the internet, so we can find more. And we have some really cool kind of obscure adaptions of Jane Eyre that we're planning on watching here in the future. But we really want to watch the ones that you guys want us to watch. So please send those in on to our email or post on Instagram, and we'd be sure to give you a little shout out and appreciation for your hard work contributing to our cool podcast.
Absolutely. So until then, we look forward to your messages, your comments on Instagram, and happy Jane Eyre reading and watching. But bye for now.
Bye. Thank you.